Welcome to the Medical Maze. I'm your host, Donellen Ray, and today we're going to talk with someone who has not been able to, in decades, get her condition identified. But first, let me introduce you to my co-host, Phil.
Hey, hi, Donellen. How are you today?
Hey, Phil. Today, I mean, can you imagine not in decades having a name for your plethora of symptoms or having anyone be able to tell you, hey, this is what you got?
It's got to be A, horrifying, and B, really confusing because you probably feel alone. So I brought this guest. This is actually my friend. I've been friends with her almost 20 years now. And just being alongside her in her journey has been eye-opening. And so I think this is a perfect avenue for her to be able to be on your show to maybe give some advice, some help. But remember, this podcast really doesn't have to have a happy ending every time. So I do think that this show, this episode, will be very eye-opening for some people.
AKA, it might be depressing.
Well, and welcome. Welcome to Allison Couture for being here and for opening up about this.
Thank you for having me.
It's just sounded, when Phil described it to me, it's like, it's not that it's not a happy ending, it just doesn't have an ending. And I think that's the part that's kind of, or at least a name that you can hang a hat on and say, this is what I've got, and this is how I can have it treated.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, I say a lot of people, I think some people take advantage of the result of getting a diagnosis at all in a lot of medical conditions, because some are very easy to come by, right? Like, if your sugar is a certain height or number, mm-hmm. you get diabetic. If your cells have mutated, you get cancer. Mm-hmm. And at least in those situations, you have this is one outcome and this is another outcome. You have some sort of journey or goal, or there is a plan that is pretty concrete at this point in our lifetime. It's mm-hmm. 2023, right? We're not living in the Middle Ages. I think it's very refreshing when you do end up getting a diagnosis.
Yeah. So when did this start for you, or how did it begin?
So when I was seven, I started getting really sick. I do remember it was around, oddly enough, the pattern that I have noticed is I get sick around October, so Halloween time, and February, so in the springtime. So February, April are the two times that my disease or my symptoms were constantly flaring up. So at the time, I was 7 years old. I weighed about 35 pounds.
Oh.
And this was back in the day in the 90s. We didn't have the internet. My mom was, I had already seen like six doctors. And I couldn't eat anything. Everything was coming out. And so finally, I had a wonderful Hispanic doctor who pushed further, and she was like, there's something that is going on. Mm-hmm. And at the time, this disease was not regularly found in children, and that was Crohn's disease. And my mom found that in an encyclopedia book. Okay. And she's the one that was like, could it be this? And then I ended up at All Children's, and then had a colonoscopy for the very first time at seven.
Oh.
On my birthday, there's a picture somewhere, my mom probably has it, where I'm being handed a bunny as I'm being rolled into the room to give me my very first colonoscopy, which is what like 50-year-olds get.
Sure. Sure. So, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was my very first situation into a diseasehood.
Okay, so you have Crohn's, and then mm-hmm. were you having symptoms outside of that?
So as time progressed, my mom, you know, looked into support groups, right? Like, who can my daughter also go to, as well as me as a parent? But then we would go to the support groups and I never kind of fit fully. So we had, and Crohn's, again, a lot of autoimmune diseases like affect people differently. Mm-hmm. But Crohn's in general is very big on that. So if you have a mild form or a medium type of form or a severe form, it's going to affect you differently. Some people could run marathons and
wow.
Yeah. I could barely run 2 inches or 2 feet down a lake before I was like, I gotta have diarrhea.
Yeah.
And unless there are bathrooms set up around a 3 mile lake, it wasn't possible. Yeah. I also got my first instance of like arthritis at 7, 8 years old in my back. So a lot of these like, you get this one thing with the Crohn's, but also all of these other things that come with it. So like kidney stones, et cetera. So, and that's because the large intestine does not absorb anything.
Can you explain to the viewers what Crohn's is if they don't know what it is?
Oh, okay. So Crohn's is an autoimmune disease where the immune system misidentifies your lining of your intestine and or your digestive system, not just your intestine. So that runs from your mouth to your anus. That is very different from colitis. Colitis stays in your colon. It's even like it's in the name of it. But Crohn's can affect anywhere. It can be in your mouth, your esophagus, all the way down to your anus. And it just depends on where it wants to attack. And that is an autoimmune thing. It is misidentifying cells that are taking place within your intestinal system and then attacking them with things like inflammation, which turn into ulcers that then bleed. And then the more and more and more that happens, it creates scar tissue. And the more scar tissue that can like build up over time will cause blockages, and then you end up with a blockage, and you have to get it removed surgically. So it's basically just your immune system attacking your digestive system.
Can we talk about that blockage? Because you mentioned blockage, and there's a story that you told me over the years about when you were really, really young.
Yeah. So I think. So in terms of people who have Crohn's disease as an adult versus as a kid, it's probably, I would never say it's probably easier as an adult, because as an adult, you are first experiencing these symptoms. As a child, you tend to learn these symptoms. You're learning as well as being, because again, at like 6, 7, you are now becoming a person. You're you're understanding you are different from another. Well, your thought process is different from another person. And so, sorry, Phil, what did you ask me again?
The blockage.
Yeah. Oh, the blockage. Okay, yes. So we discovered this on my birthday. I ended up turning 8. I got put on a bunch of medications. These are all, at this point, trial medications because I'm a kid with Crohn's. And back then, Crohn's was not very well known with kids. So I was put on a bunch of stuff. There is something that, again, I'm this is just me. And what I have learned through a lot of support system or support groups, Crohn's is not the same for everybody. So what I say, I do want to give that disclaimer. What didn't work for me doesn't mean it won't work for you. And that is pretty common with any autoimmune disease or pretty much any disease. I mean, we even see that with ADHD, like Adderall might not be good for one person, but it is for another. So I was on something called Pentasa, and I would inform, it was in a capsule form, and I would inform my mom, I'd inform my doctor, look, I'm noticing these things, Every time I take my pills, it hurts. And I'm in an extreme pain, doubled over. There is no out. And I was told, you know, you're just wanting attention. You don't want to take these pills. Kind of like you're just being a bratty child, or you just don't want to deal with it kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I dealt with a lot of like, they're not listening to me. I know what I'm feeling is correct. A lot of like gaslighting in a medical sense, unintentionally, really, from like my mom and from my doctor, because this, again, at the time was not seen very often in children. Then it gets worse over a period of years. I'm now at this point flushing my pills, which my mom was a teacher. She made only $32,000 a year. She used to have to make like small beds for me behind her desk because she couldn't take off work anymore, or she'd get fired. I'm flushing pills. I'm throwing them in garbage disposals. And then when she would find them, it'd be this huge blowout because she's spending $300 or more on medications, which is understandable. But I'm also a kid. I'm not thinking this is costing my mom so much money. So then they scope me. They don't see anything. And then I am in the hospital for 3 months, and finally, it like blocked completely. There was nothing that was going to get through. So they did the surgery. What they do is they take the intestine out, put it right on like a table, and decide what to cut. They saw my medications lodged in my intestinal wall, undissolved with the writing still on it.
Oh, no.
So from that point forward, things changed in terms of me mentioning, like, I can tell something is going on here. And ever since then, it's been a very different thing. But that doesn't mean that, like, even now as an adult, sometimes when I say, like, this is going on, I have that same fear with, like, ERs, because I have so many rare things that
ER doctors... being heard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or so, listen to. Yeah. And I'm sure your mother just wanted you to feel better.
Oh, that, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And take a pill so you feel better.
Yes. So like to deal with like, and the word burden comes up quite a lot in my like mental health situations, because that was the very first time that I had like wanted, I hated myself. As a kid. Seeing your mom like cry and nobody can help me, and then you're seeing her also on the phone with insurance companies fighting for just please pay for my daughter's MRI. Please pay for my daughter's.
Yeah, her treatment. She needs it to get better.
Yeah.
And did they say that this had anything to do with Crohn's, this blockage?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. So at that time, because I had already been diagnosed with Crohn's at 8. I was 12 when the blockage happened. So I had been on these meds from 8 to 12. And like 18 different pills.
Oh, gosh.
So, but again, it was like it's a cry for help. It's just like she wants attention.
I can only imagine that being implanted in your mind as a child.
Yeah.
And then maybe carrying that forward as, like you said, going to different doctors and nobody's listening to me.
Yeah.
I know I have something wrong here.
Yeah.
And then that's where I think, you know, so you had the Crohn's and you were diagnosed and you had this blockage.
Mm-hmm.
Were you still having things outside of that that were still, we don't know what they are? Yeah.
Yes. So a big one was a pain above my belly button, which tends to go along with the gastro stuff. That has been happening since birth. They've scoped me, ultrasound, MRI enterography, CT, CTE, all of these big medical things that would happen. And no one can figure out why above my belly button, these things, this feeling was going on until recently. So recently it was, I went in the emergency room. I was feeling very, very, very nauseous about like 2 weeks prior. And it got to the point where I was like, I need to go to the emergency room, which I tend to avoid because they don't seem to help me ever.
Nobody's listening.
Yeah, it's just my Crohn. And but I've been in remission from my Crohn's now for since I was 22.
Oh, good.
So I go in. I actually, on our way to the hospital, tell my mom, we are not going to make it there. Please stop at a fire station. Because I was in so much pain, and it was like a weird pain. It wasn't really like pain. It was just, if I breathe in, whatever is going to my lungs is pushing on something that is hurting above my belly button. Mm. So go into the ambulance. They give me, you know, fentanyl shot, blah, blah, blah. And I'm also spilling, like, I don't have an appendix, because then they're going through all of their list, right? And I'm like, I need you to bypass all of your list. I need you to listen to me on terms of these things. So I end up spewing everything that I need to do. I don't have a gallbladder. I don't have an appendix. I don't have this. I don't have that. It's not my Crohn's. It's been in remission. I had a colonoscopy just 3 months ago, like just trying as I'm going through pain. And it wasn't, and they still were like, it's Crohn's. And they, despite all of it. And if I also, that has happened before where they decided to give me prednisone, which is what makes your face really big. Mm-hmm. If you are given prednisone without a reason, without an inflammation, or also if you've been on it for too long, it will cause symptoms.
I makes have heard
it
worse. That.
It makes you bloat. It makes you... It's awful. So I was trying to avoid that this time, because this is the second time, but the worst time that I've felt this pain above my belly button. So finally I was like, touch it. You can literally see it's palpating and it hurts. So they touch it. So immediately they were like, it's an abdominal aortic aneurysm.
Oh.
And I was like, finally I'm getting them away from just the intestinal to look at something else.
Seriously.
So they wheel me in. He immediately says that to the ER doctor. The ER doctor has me there for a little while. I'm on painkillers, all this stuff. It stops as much because I also had to get into certain positions to try and get it to like calm down a bit. And he was going to let me go. But then all of a sudden, 20 minutes goes by. He comes back in the room and he goes, your troponin levels are high.
Oh, what is that?
So troponin means that, so troponin only ends up in your blood system because they had taken blood when your heart is starting to be damaged.
Oh.
So at this point, the ER doctor thought I was having a heart attack at 34.
Oh, gosh.
So he kept me. And I went from a level 7 troponin to 41 in less than an hour, meaning something is damaging my heart, but they're not figuring. It's not as high as a heart attack, which gets up to the thousands.
Oh,
but something else is going on.
Yeah, it's progressively getting worse. Something's happening here.
But all other blood work is normal. No inflammation. Nothing is happening otherwise. So they keep me there. I did a, you know, chest CT or heart CT, all that stuff. Normal. But then the doctor comes in 3 days later because they kept me for 3 days to monitor my heart.
Okay.
And she sees it is so swollen and red and hot as if I have inflammation there. And she was like, I think whatever's happening is your autoinflammatory disease that has been undiscovered, we don't know about, and is not showing up on any tests, because you could physically see it. You could see the red. You could feel the red. You could feel the inflammation there, but for some reason, no inflammation on tests.
So they ruled out the aortic aneurysm.
Yep.
And now it's these other things that you've been happening outside your Crohn's and outside everything else.
Yeah.
That is anti-inflammatory.
Yeah. It's called an auto-inflammatory disease.
Sorry, auto-inflammatory.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's kind of the newest and left off.
But you've been having symptoms, you think, related to it.
My entire life.
Your entire life, since you were a child.
Yeah.
Okay. So outside of Crohn's, outside of everything, you've had this, they now call it the auto-inflammatory.
Yeah. It's a new class of diseases.
But they just don't have a name for what it exactly is. Your group of symptoms.
Yes.
You know, the pain there. And you said that...
The traveling inflammation is the biggest one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which meaning that it shows up in different places.
Yeah. It mimics a lot of things.
Okay.
I've got some pictures.
Yeah,
here.
That'd be great.
So can we go over some of these photos, and then Allison, you kind of give us a description of what's going on in the photo?
Yeah.
All right, so this one.
So I woke up, and again, I was like, man, my hip is really hurting. Why is my hips hurting? I look, and I have this massive, bruise right on my hip joint, right above it.
Just shows up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then, I don't know, Phil, if you have the next.
Well, I got a bunch of them, so.
Okay.
It's
because you said it was traveling. Oh, wow, your fingertips.
I didn't grab the other one, but I just wanted to show that one.
Yeah, so this is another one where randomly my, it seems to love to do it to my right side. It'll attack the fingertips.
And what do they do for that then?
Nothing. I'm on methotrexate, which is a chemo.
Oh,
very mild chemo. It's actually one of the safest drugs in the world.
Okay.
And it helps with the Crohn's. It's the one that put me in remission with the Crohn's. It helps anything rheumatoid. What it does is it just kind of shuts your immune system off a bit.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
I see. So then you had the fingertips. You had the
feet.
Oh,
yeah, that's the Raynaud's.
Explain what that is to people too.
So Raynaud's is a symptom, or it can be, so Raynaud's phenomenon can be a primary disease, but it also can be a symptom of a disease. So lupus is a symptom of this, or it's a symptom of lupus. So what happens is in cold weather, your capillaries will close, and then it, reduces the blood supply to the fingertips and the feet.
So that looked like some sort of, okay.
This is another, I'm sitting there, all of a sudden I'm like, my pinky toe hurts. And then it progresses to a bruise. I'm watching a bruise happen live. And then a few hours later, it's gone.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. That quick?
Yes.
That's amazing.
So your face, too.
Yeah, so any emotional response, anytime I get upset, even in the slightest way, inflammation will just randomly attack.
It looks like a black eye.
This time it went, you can definitely tell if you look towards my ear versus where my face is. There's
a space. Right there on your cheek, sort of. Yeah.
And I guess this time it was just, it wanted to attack my face. That one, it was attacking my eye socket. And again, it'll go away within maybe minutes, hours, a week.
But it certainly hurts at that moment. So you know something's going on.
Yeah. I'll just be sitting there and I'm like, something's really hurting. And then I'll look and you can actively see it start to form.
And that's what you're talking about, the traveling. It's really anywhere.
Yes.
I mean, your soles of your feet and your fingertip. Wow.
Yeah.
And there's nothing because they don't know what it is.
There's no tests yet.
So there's nothing that they really know, and it seems to go away quickly in most cases.
So again, catching it is also very hard to do. I had a really good doctor because I used to live in Canada for about 6 months, but I went to the Institute of Research in Montreal.
Okay.
And my doctor there, Dr. Chapdelaine, he's wonderful doctor. He's an immunologist or allergist. And he's the very first person in 2016 that told me, I think you have an undiscovered, undiagnosed autoinflammatory disease, and we just don't have tests right now that are able to pick up on those markers for those that inflammation. He's like, I can visibly see inflammation happening, but anytime we run tests, it comes back, no, she's fine, there's no inflammation, when you can visibly see there's something going on.
So were you like relieved at that moment that somebody believed you?
Oh, yeah.
After all those years and yeah. and all the tests and all the things and everyone predicted yeah. or it's Crohn's. And then you finally had somebody who said, oh, no, I can't tell you what it is.
Yeah.
But I do know you've got something.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. A big one was, I'm trying to think of like.
While you think of that, I have a big list of some of the symptoms and conditions that you have. So I'm going to put those on the screen. So if any of those jog your memory, Allison.
Okay.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, these are just all of my diseases.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is, so you have all of this on top of this unidentified one we've been talking about.
Right.
And you don't know, I should ask. So you don't know if any of these other, the symptoms of what these other ones have been told you have.
Yeah.
You don't know that, does it play into your auto-inflammatory? Or do you have some of those or all of those, or is it your auto-inflammatory and unidentified one?
So that's the best game that you get to play when it comes to term with autoinflammatory things.
But we feel better, I guess, as a society, of course, when we have a name for something.
Yeah. And honestly, like a lot of people, because even if I'm like, yeah, it's an undiagnosed, what could they possibly give me that would even help? Because I can't take anti-inflammatories. If I didn't have Crohn's, a lot of these things would probably be able to be handled pretty easily because I could take Advil.
Anti-inflammatory, yeah, of course.
I'm allergic to turmeric. It makes my fingertips itchy.
Seriously.
So it almost...
Like a seasoning?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's an it is a natural anti-inflammatory.
It sure is, yeah.
But it makes my skin itchy.
So you can't do that. So yeah. What do you do then? Write it out.
Yeah.
Because that's what it sounds like.
Yeah. You just suffer.
And you hope that in a few hours or minutes or whatever,
that
it goes away.
Yeah.
Okay. So
there's a video that Allison did send me, and I'm not going to show because it's pretty graphic, but maybe we'll include that on the end somewhere. But it's not graphic. It's very emotional. It's very emotional.
Is it emotional because you know me as a friend or?
Just seeing it, it's very sad.
Oh.
Seeing you go through that is very sad.
Okay. I mean, I'm not opposed to it.
We'll show it later as some bonus info.
Okay.
I still know it might be a shock to some people, you know, to see it.
So yeah. That's why I don't date a lot of people.
Well, let's actually talk about that.
Let's talk about the social ramifications of this.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And also, I'm very interested in understanding, because you talked about as a child, too, about the mental health aspects of it. But let's hit the social first.
Okay.
So what has that been like? First off, besides the dating, which we'd mentioned, and we'll get to that, but what about just going out?
Oh, yeah.
Functioning in society in general, going to the grocery store or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, is that difficult? Is it depends upon how you feel that day? Do you have things on your feet? You know?
Yeah. So I guess like you always have to go day by day because symptoms can show up randomly. Mm-hmm. Like within seconds right now, something can show up. Yeah, I would say for social life, it's pretty hard also because like you want to say, yes, I'll go out or yes, I can do this. I know as a kid, it was really hard with the Crohn's and just with the Crohn's. If I had a friend that was doing a sleepover birthday party, One, they were probably ordering pizza, which I couldn't have because of the marinara sauce. Oh. Or they most definitely would have a chocolate cake, and I couldn't have chocolate. And then sleeping over in general, I will probably have diarrhea at some point or be in like doubled over fetal position pain that I need like a hot shower on my back. Like there's one friend that I had that anytime she would invite me over for a sleepover, I was waking up at 3 a.m., 4 a.m. to sit in the shower just with the heat on.
Oh, that's so, I'm so sorry to hear that as a kid.
So like in social aspects as a kid, there's that. Now as an adult, because I had stage 4 endometriosis inside my bladder, which is rare, I had a total hysterectomy. So now as an adult, when you want to like date someone, and so I'm pansexual, so I will go either way. But if we go on to the topic of like men, I have to disclose, like, can't have kids. Like it's a lot of like, not necessarily like, I'm not embarrassed to say that, but at the same time, I kind of am like.
It's kind of a heavy topic to kind of start off with but early on.
I also don't want to drag it out.
Makes sense.
So
makes sense.
At what point do I just like.
Just tell them.
This.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what you're getting. And there will be those out there that accept that. Yeah. And I'm sure some are just like, whoa, that's heavy but also, right now. But,
but even me, I'm like, if you're willing to accept that red flag. Like, why do you want to take care of someone that seems so like, you know what I mean? Like, oh my
don't
God.
Defeat yourself before you get started, though.
But I'm so like, this is what you're going to get. Yeah. Especially like sex is not a priority for me. My priority is survival.
And yes.
So
yes,
like, if you're going to sit there and coerce me or being like, you know, yesterday you weren't feeling well, so why not today? And that kind of crap.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't want that. I don't care.
Well, then that causes stress, which will give you symptoms.
Exactly.
Seriously.
It's a cyclical thing. Yeah. So like, that's why I've been single for such a long time. Because just seems easier than trying to appease another person, which sounds awful and selfish, but I feel like I have to be selfish to survive with what the diseases I have.
Well, I know that just in talking and hearing that, you know, you are very highly educated. You went to school. You were going to be a doctor, I believe. And then, so what does that mean? What does all this mean then going out into the workforce? Or can you go out in the workforce because of all the symptoms?
So, I mean, I've always had to work because my mom was a single mom. And
okay.
So, like, at 15, I had a job. Mm-hmm. At 16, all of these things. But I still, in all of those jobs, struggled heavily. Especially, like, when my Crohn's wasn't in remission. So, that's between the periods of 7 all the way up until 22. Which is my entire workforce situation.
Sure.
So just having to do all of that, and I mean, even school at that point was like, and I loved school and I wanted to do it, but there were so many moments of like my very first time of getting a kidney stone was in my comp 2 final exam.
Oh,
and I had to write an essay. While having my first kidney stone, and I did it, and I got an A, but I was on the floor in the bathroom where my boyfriend had to go in and lift me up and drag me to the hospital. So there's a lot of, like, moments where it's like, is it worth it in terms of this way or that way or any of that? And then to my last job I tried to have, I got hired at Advent Health as a surgery scheduler. And this was right as the pandemic was going on. And I had to stop my immunoglobulin, so my treatment for the antibodies, because we wanted a definite diagnosis. And I had to get a pneumonia shot and then wait a few months and then get another one to see if I was even making antibodies to it. And then that's how they ended up diagnosing me completely with the disease name that I have. So it's specific antibody deficiency, or called SAD.
Oh.
Really? It's really called SAD?
It's really called SAD.
Oh, really? Because I'm used to SAD as what? Seasonal affective disorder or something
or
like
that. Or depression. Yeah, depression.
Yeah.
So that's called SAD, but also my chronic fatigue syndrome / myalgic encephalomyelitis, which is SAD me.
Oh. Wow. So, and you still don't know, with all of these things you're getting diagnosed with, mm-hmm. Do you feel confident that, and I guess this kind of goes back to the question before, do you feel confident that that's what it is? Or is it just because we need to have a name for this group of symptoms and it could be this anti-inflammatory thing all related or something?
So the specific antibody deficiency, absolutely we know.
Okay.
Because when I did not produce any antibodies for the two vaccines that I was given,
okay,
you should be showing an abundance of those kind of cells within your body because you got the vaccine.
Okay. So there's scientific
evidence. Yeah. Yes.
Tests.
So, but you have to do this sort of thing. And I was really sick, getting infections constantly, bronchitis, really sick. And it's pretty risky. Like, I could die from pneumonia kind of thing. So, that happened, but the inflammation still does not show up on tests. So that's how we know. I've also had, I've had now 5 genetic tests done.
Okay.
3 in Canada, 2 down here, 1 for acute intermittent porphyria. I don't have those results yet. I do get porphyrins in my stools, which is one way to detect this. It's a rare disorder. It's called the vampire disease because when you're out in the sun, it causes you to overproduce porphyrins, which then it's a hemoglobin thing. You have to get blood transfusions. And so back in the day, when people wouldn't go out in the sun, they would think they were vampires.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Oh, so that's how I used to have to dress. I couldn't have the sun touch me at all.
Really?
Yeah. And luckily, I was in Canada at that time and I was living with someone that knew how to wrap like a hijab.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, that's how.
And how long did that last?
Because
here you are in Florida, so, you know.
Yeah. So I even have there is a picture. I don't think I sent it to Phil, but down here in Florida, I wrapped myself the same way.
Okay.
So that was in 2016. You have to wait a year and a half or about a year to get a rheumatologist up in Canada. Mm. So I got, you know, go see a rheumatologist, but wait. So that took from 2016. Then I got transferred to a diagnostician who only looks at one person at a time. They looked into my immunoglobulin levels for the very first time in my life. And then I got moved over to an immunologist allergist who then was like, you aren't making antibodies. We need to give you plasma. And I was also put on the lupus med because I had enough symptoms of lupus, but I don't have a positive ANA.
Okay.
Which
would define whether you have it or
but
not.
It okay. Also can happen. False negatives will happen. And then later on in life, you develop the actual positive one. I got put on the Plaquenil. That helped me. I did a complete 180. Yeah.
So you don't have to wrap like that anymore being here?
No.
Okay.
No, yeah.
Okay. Wow, this is great. So so you had that. So you're still having symptoms, though, with the anti-inflammatory. I mean, auto-inflammatory.
Yes.
Sorry, sorry about that.
No, you're fine.
So you have all these other things that are going on. You have that, still have this auto-inflammatory that nobody has seemed to... To,
yes.
And you've been to several doctors, and what did they tell you?
So, again, the rheumatologist, he just has me on the Plaquenil because I have the symptoms, seems to help. But there's no definite thing. Other than the arthritis, he can definitely figure out the arthritis. But I'm on methotrexate, and he was like, you're already on a medication.
Okay.
There's nothing else we could do for you anyways. With the Crohn's, same thing. So then I saw a hematologist, which I had never seen before. Hematologists deal with your blood, your capillaries, all of that. Whether you have acute intermittent porphyria. Porphyria is the one that affects the blood system.
Mm-hmm.
So I got sent to them, and they are the ones that are like, I don't think you have intermittent or acute intermittent porphyria. It seems to mimic it a lot.
Okay.
But he goes, do you get inflammation when you are stressed or upset? And I was like, oh, yeah. It loves to go after. He's like, I think you have an undiagnosed, undetermined autoinflammatory disease. And I think you need to go see the National Institute of Health.
Okay, great. I was wondering who determines the name of these, or who identifies them so that we have a name.
Right. That is the national place, okay. That's the National Institute of Health. They're the ones that they can discover, diagnose.
Okay.
Obviously it can also happen elsewhere, like Shands, Angelman's, a big thing with Angelman's, which is another rare thing, happen more there than it did at like national, like there's other scientists that can end up covering it. But there is an actual hospital that dedicates their entire time to research, to treatment, to studies, all of that. They don't require insurance.
Oh.
It is literally where you go to get diagnosed, where they discover it, or where you go for studies to get better treatment options. And will pay you for that.
Oh, okay.
But that's in Maryland.
Okay.
So I was already told once in 2016, you have an autoinflammatory disease that has not been discovered yet and will not ever show up on blood tests. And that was in Montreal at the Institute of Research of Allergies or Immunology. But I was not told by them that I need to go to the NIH. This is the first time, and this was through a hematologist. They were like, if you do not have acute intermittent porphyria, we are going to write up a referral. It has to be very extensive.
Okay.
Lots of, like, you've already had multiple genetic tests done to rule out other things.
Sure.
Which I have. I have 5. And they send it off, and then they decide whether you are someone that they need to look at.
Mm-hmm.
The most recent discovery of a new autoinflammatory disease was in May of this year.
Okay.
And it involves only 3 people in the entire world so far.
Wow. Well, at least you have a place to go next. So we're getting ready to the end of our time here, but I think that I would love to follow up and see what happens with you.
Yeah.
And see if you went there and what did they say, because I just think dealing with this from childhood or some semblance of it, you deserve an answer, and hopefully you're going to get one.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be really interested in hearing what happens. So if we can follow up with you, that would be great.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's also like a lot of people will get told, like, this is your new normal, right?
Yeah.
Or not get a diagnosis. I don't know. I mean, I don't know that many people that don't get like a definitive diagnosis and are just told, like, deal with it sometimes.
Mm.
But I'm sure there's a lot, right?
Yeah.
But like, I'm just the type of person where I need it to have a name.
Sure, sure. I want it. I need something I can hang my hat on and says, this is what I got. Instead of saying, okay, well, I got this. It's this symptom, this symptom, this symptoms, and that rolls up into something.
I think the only reason, too, it has nothing even to do with, like, my own personal, like, I need to know the name, is if I have to go to the emergency room, it is so much more stressful having to be like, well, I kind of have this,
yeah,
but I don't have this.
Yeah.
So to have like a definitive thing is really refreshing, really easy. Once you have it, everything becomes easier. Navigating the entire system becomes easier.
Wow. Well, we wish you the best. I appreciate you being here. And
thank
you so much, Allison Couture, for sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks all for right. having me here.
Great. Thank
now,
you.
Now, before we get out of here, though, I want everybody, if you are watching the podcast, to head on over to our website, medicalmazepodcast.com. You can find all the episodes there. If you want to be a guest, you can register as being a guest as well. And wow, what a great episode. Allison, thank you so much for
no problem.
Being a part of the show. So guys, I guess we will catch you later.
Thank you.
Yes.